listening to Psychic Ceremony on CJLO 1690 AM. I'm Owen, I'm your host. I have a really fun, exciting episode here for you today. From now until October 26th here at CJLO, we're having our annual funding drive. The funding drive is what keeps us alive as a community, not-for-profit radio station. The funding drive allows us to purchase necessary equipment for our station to keep operating as per usual, and allows us to upgrade equipment that's outdated or broken. It's important for people to have access to the airwaves, and the funding drive helps keep our college radio alive. You can learn more at cjlofundingdrive.com, where donations can also be made. Donations can be made to enter raffles with prizes from so many amazing sponsors, including my favorite Montreal record label, Celluloid Lunch Records, concert tickets from Blue Skies Turn Black, graphic novel bundles from Drawn and Quarterly, and so much more. I'm really excited today to get into an interview that I had a few days ago with Greg Akell of the band Drop 19s. Drop 19s are about to hit the road for a string of shows, including a stop in Montreal next week, and the show is being put on by Blue Skies Turn Black. That is on Monday the 21st at Bar La Ritz with support from Olivia O. Later in the show today, I'm going to have two pairs of tickets to give away to callers, so be sure not to go anywhere and have your phones ready. Thank you for tuning in today, and please enjoy this interview. I am here with Greg from Drop 19s. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Greg. I'm really thrilled to be doing this interview with you right now.
Hey, thanks, Owen. It's a pleasure to be talking to you, actually, so thank you.
The Drop 19s, for the uninitiated, were formed in 1990 and disbanded in 1995. Over those 5 years, Greg and the crew had the opportunity to tour with Blur, PJ Harvey, had been supported by the Cranberries and Radiohead, and now, after an extended hiatus of nearly 30 years, are back with a phenomenal new record and are touring once again. And I'm really thrilled to have Greg on the show here. It's a real privilege. It's a real honor. And Greg and the band are hitting the road again next week for the second tour, I guess, right, since reforming?
Yeah, I don't even want to call it either one really a tour, because they've been a handful of dates. There was the argument that we should go out and be on the road for 3 months and maybe go overseas. But, you know, after such a long time off, we weren't sure of a few things, honestly. One of the things we weren't sure of is whether people would show up. And that was the first thing. The second thing we weren't sure of is if it was possible, if we could really get up there and actually play. I mean, you know, it's such a long time, there's nothing was certain about this. And so we went out on the first leg. We played, you know, some major markets in Brooklyn and L.A. and DC, Philly, those kinds of cities, and it was reassuring. I mean, people did show up, and we could do it, you know. And that was, I don't want to say an epiphany, but it certainly was like a load off, you know, to realize that this was possible. So, you know, it was a short run, and just the nature of our lives and assembling this band, we're spread out all over the country and the members. And so it's not easy to assemble us, and it's not easy for us to take a whole lot of time out of our lives all the time. So so we are just doing another short run, you know, and that'll be all we do this year. But thankfully, I'm really looking forward to going to Montreal, because it's, you know, I just think it's such an amazing city. And the band did play there a couple times in the early 90s, and they were pretty cool shows. So, you know, we're looking forward to that.
We got to talk a little bit about Montreal the last time I saw you, I guess about a year and a half ago. And I was like, you guys got to come. And you asked me what rooms would fit for your band, and I suggested Barlaritz. So I'm happy to see it's come together.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I appreciate that too. I mean, thank you. Obviously I'm not in the know, and we have agents that look at that stuff. Obviously, I don't book the shows personally, but it's like I was happy to see that on the list. It looks like a cool room, so we're very much looking forward to that show.
So I first met you about a year and a half ago. I was kind of following The Cure on tour. I saw 8 or 9 shows, right, and I'd never had the chance to see The Cure before. They've been like, you know, a really important band to me, and just like my love of music and my, you know, identity as a music lover. And so my good friend Zach, one of my best friends in the world, if he's listening, shout out Zach. He put us in touch. You guys work together in a sort of city adjacent job in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And he was like, "Oh man, we got to get lunch with Greg. He's like a huge Cure fan." Yeah. And we talked about The Cure.
We did, and I think that I'll interrupt you, but I think that what we realized was that I had done a similar thing, many, many years before in 89.
Yeah.
I did a similar type thing. It was the prayer tour, and I followed them around much like you were doing on this particular one. And I think I went to 4 in a row, and actually one of them was in Montreal.
Yeah. I was going to say, you telling me, was the Giants Stadium show the first on the North American leg of that tour?
No, it was not at all. But it was the first one that I went to.
I remember you telling me that it might have been your favorite that you'd ever seen of them.
It was certainly the most magnificent one. It's a good question. I had seen them a couple years before that. I had seen The Cure at Madison Square Garden,
right?
On the kissing tour, they called it.
Okay,
and that was the first time I had seen The Cure, and that's a pretty amazing experience because you know, people of course hold like Just Like Heaven highly regarded, and a lot of the tracks on that album. And it, you know, this thing where like you can only hear a song for the first time once, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you can come to love a song, but you can never ever hear it for the first time again. You know, it's just a unique experience as per your relationship to a song. And I do remember very specifically hearing him say the title of the song before he played it, before the first time I heard it. He said, "This is just like heaven," and then plays the song. And it's just the song that's become so much so classic like that. It's just an amazing way to first hear that song, you know? So I remember that very clearly. But the Giant Stadium thing was interesting just because that's 60,000 people, and this was sold out. I mean, The Cure was not played on the radio. I mean, they were very rarely, they had a couple, you know, minor hits on like what was in cities, they'd have, you know, little towns, no, sorry, the little stations in a town might have a, you know, they might play something like In Between Days or Just Like Heaven, but they were not like a big radio band. And it's just an unbelievable thing. They're playing 60,000 people and it sold out. It's just kind of the coolest thing ever to see that, the force of that kind of audience.
And were they like opening the show with Disintegration tracks? Like,
of course,
yeah,
they were. And this was the boldest thing I'd ever seen or heard. They opened in sequence. They opened with Plainsong into Pictures of You into Close Down, and they do that. But you got to realize now it makes total sense, right? Oh, of course, Disintegration. Why wouldn't you open for those three songs?
Of course.
But this was like, this was a couple months into the album being released. People didn't know those songs.
Yeah.
Because back then there was no, you know, like that. How would they know them? The record's just out. And they knew how good this was. And it was just such a bold thing. You'd think that you're playing for 60,000 people. That's a wide swath. Probably some of the people in the audience, and you know, like they're vaguely aware of The Cure, maybe, and they're at that show, and they open with like the three songs that are essentially, you know, like, you know, they must have had a fear of putting people to sleep, but it was just the exact opposite. I think it was just the most powerful, confident coolest thing I've ever seen. And that is how they opened that set in general. On all those shows, they would open with those three tracks.
Yeah.
And I just think that was very bold and very correct. I mean, they knew what they had in their hands.
For sure.
It was a monster, you know.
That show at Giants Stadium is a really legendary show, and there's a lot of great recordings online circulating. I have a nice folder from that show I love to revisit.
And wow, I'd love for you to share that with me. I'd love to hear that.
Yeah, yeah, I will. Cool. It was just a couple days later, too, that they came to Montreal and played at the Forum, another very iconic place that ceases to exist in that capacity anymore. I know you've said before that nothing from The Cure really matters beyond Disintegration, but they're back. They've got a couple new tracks. Have you checked it out? Is that something?
I have. Yeah, I have. And there's some moments in the new track that I've heard, but I stand by what I say. I don't want to be cynical or glib about The Cure. They're mm-hmm. just so important to me, but, yeah, and by the way, there are some moments in the past in what I call Modern Cure, and by the way, I even consider Wish to be Modern Cure, mm-hmm. which is just like 2 years after Disintegration. But I think that's where it changed for me, and maybe it's because I was changing too. You know, like everything is everything, right? It's not just what something is; it's who you are when it happens, and right. I mean, we all experience this. But there are some moments along the way. I certainly love Underneath the Stars. And yeah, that was like track. That's 2008. That I think that song is important. There's a song that I forget the title of it, but it's very long and it opens up. Has what, that bum, bum bum bum
out of this ba-da, world? Ba-da,
bum, out of this world.
Beautiful.
Which
yeah.
you know is just an insanely good song. So I say nothing matters, but I just mean that in a comprehensive way. There's just after Disintegration, it's just. You know, I don't know. It's not hard to, how are you going to, and the new one, I don't know. I'll just be honest. I think it has some musically some good moments. I find the lyrics to be a little bit, you know, a little bit trite. I hate saying that, about Robertson. I mean, he's not listening to this. I don't think so, but, it's like, I don't know how far your station with your reach is, but I, you know, I just think that it's a little bit overstated, or you know, and self-parody is a word that comes to play. That's probably a little too strong, but but anyway, that was my take on it. But I did listen to it. That said, you know, I care so much that I listened to it probably 10 times in a row, and
yeah,
you know, to try to really absorb it and try to get it. And that's my takeaway.
Of course. Clearly, you have a lot of love for labels like Dedicated Records, Domino, Creation, Factory, 4AD. And I can really see this in the DNA of, you know, your musical identity and in Drop 19s. Was this kind of pocket of music something you came into when you were in high school? How did you really come into this?
Not so much high school, maybe very, very late high school. I discovered some Creation stuff, but I went to boarding school in New England, and no record stores really. I mean, you could go to Northampton and maybe there's maybe one, but you're on campus. It's like going to college, but you're like a teenager, but you don't have a car like you do in suburban towns, and it's just, you're kind of isolated, you know, And there just wasn't a lot of ways to, I mean, I was from New York, so I'd spend summers in New York, but I guess I'd learned about stuff there, but my real life was kind of this New England prep school thing. And so, I was kind of a fan of the bigger independent, the bigger indie bands, not indie, but alternative, whatever. I don't even know if there was a name for it back then. But bands like Echo and the Bunnymen, New Order, The Cure, Jesus and Mary Chain, those are the bigger bands, and those I'd see them when they come in the summer in New York, you know. And so the sort of that other level of stuff you're talking about, the Creation stuff, when it got to My Bloody Valentine, and I discovered that stuff the summer of that year I graduated, 89. It's also the year I discovered Spaceman 3, and I also discovered honestly, even though they've been happening already for a while, Sonic Youth, it was Daydream Nation that I discovered maybe a year after it came out. So those records meant a lot to me, and you know, kind of formed this idea. It's funny you mentioned those labels, because those are the labels when we made, you know, we got an 8-track recorder and recorded some songs, and which, funnily enough, for being this show tomorrow morning, it's going on pre-sale. Finally, these songs that we're talking about right now are finally going on sale, like for people to buy, and it will be streaming when the thing is released.
Oh wow!
Which is just kind of surreal to me. I'm saying that this is a new release, and it's like from 1991. Which is what this compilation is called, because it's the songs we wrote then. But more to the story about the labels is that when we put those cassettes together, that's where we sent them. We sent them to Creation and 4AD and Rough Trade, the label. I think we even sent it to Factory. But we sent it to those labels and Dedicated. We sent it to them because, honestly, yes, I like the music on them, and I had the addresses from the back of records, right? But more to the point, I felt like it wasn't that we were a British-y sounding band. It was more that, like, I thought that these labels would have less people in them, and that maybe someone would open the package and like listen to it. I don't think I was wrong about that, you know, because a week later I got calls from, you know, all these British accents calling me in my Boston apartment, and it was a very euphoric moment for me, because I just didn't plan. I don't want to say that success, but at that moment, this was success. Beyond getting a call back from a record label was beyond my comprehension. Even though I was aiming for that and playing for that, for it to actually happen was just a little bit beyond my grasp, honestly. And it was like a dog catching the proverbial dog catching the car. But that is how we got started. And, you know, we ultimately signed to an American label, to Caroline, who they had Smashing Pumpkins and Hole. And we were an American band, and we figured that we should lean into that a bit more than, you know, we're not, even though we had sort of a British sound and we were associated with some of these bands like Slowdive and Ride, Chapter House, Lush. Even though we were associated with them, we felt that, you know, we are American, and we felt a little bit like fish out of water there in some ways. So we signed in America, but we didn't, those songs on 1991 that we, those demos, we scrapped them effectively. We said, we got a record deal here. Let's write an album. And that album became Delaware. So we didn't re-record any of these songs that are being released tomorrow. They just sat there for years, and they ended up on YouTube and stuff, but not from anyone in the band, but just because there were cassettes out there. Mm-hmm. And so that's an interesting thing that you bring up those labels, because it all comes back. I mean, now it's finally getting released, those songs.
We're going to take a quick break, and I'm going to play some ads. And then once we're back, you're going to hear the song My Aquarium from that debut album, Delaware. One of my favorites. I'm still hunting down that 10-inch, which I think only came out in the UK when I was there this summer. I didn't come across it anywhere. But don't touch that dial. We'll be right back.
Montreal's ultimate comic haven, Crossover Comics, is celebrating their 12th anniversary on October 26th with a sale you won't want to miss. Absolutely everything is discounted, with 15% off store-wide, buy two, get one free deals on select groups of items, and free Halloween comics available while supplies last. Also, creator signings will be taking place in-store throughout the day, including Tate Bromball, writer of the new series Green Lantern, Dark. Don't miss the Crossover Comics 12th anniversary sale from October 25th to 27th, in-store at 3560 Notre-Dame West in Saint-Henri, right next to Metro Lionel Group.
Dust off your boots, pour some sweet tea, and tune in to the freshest of folk, roots, indie, and more, along with some favorites of the past. The best of old and new meet together in The Alley every Friday at 11 a.m. only on CJLO 1690 AM.
You're listening to Psychic Ceremony on CJLO 1690 AM right now. CJLO is currently hosting its funding drive to raise money to support the station over the next year, and information on how you can support can be found at cjlofundingdrive.com. Today, I'm airing an interview I did, an exclusive interview with Greg Akell of the Drop 19s. Stay tuned for a giveaway coming up shortly within the hour to see Drop 19s next Monday the 21st at Barlaritz. This next song I'm going to play is called My Aquarium. I was going to play the album version off Delaware, but I decided to rock out and play the EP version, which might have the edge for me. Really great track. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back. So on the topic of Delaware, Kick the Tragedy has kind of become a really unlikely hit. It feels like it shouldn't be. It's got an incredibly long intro with all of the spoken word, and it's not very single-like, but it seems to have really become a fan favorite.
Yeah.
Is that something that's kind of happened post-split, or was that...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you know... We played that song as a joke live, I think, once or twice ever. but we never played it ever. Because it was an experiment, you know, it was an mm-hmm. experiment. And I think Delaware is full of experiments, honestly. It's part of its charm. You know, some of the experiments works better than others, I think. But the tragedy is just, I always knew it was be central to the album, but certainly it wasn't a single because, I mean, it's 9 minutes long. It's effectively an instrumental with a spoken interlude. And you can't really, you know, back then, MTV was a big player in a band. For a band like mine, the way that you get people to know about your band and get people to come to shows was by having video on MTV. Obviously not on regular rotation, but they had a show called 120 Minutes, and then subsequently a show called Alternative Nation. And if your video would be played on there, it was a road to, like, you know, I don't want to say success, but, like, you know, having a future, you know. And no doubt about it, when we play shows and they were crowded, it was because of, like, the Winona video on MTV. I mean, that there's just no doubt about that. And a song like Kick the Tragedy, you can't, by definition, there's no such thing as a 9-minute instrumental song with a spoken interlude being a video on MTV, right? So there is something to that song that does speak to people. And I've learned that over the years. But it's absolutely true. I mean, it's by far leaps and bounds ahead of anything else that we've done in terms of popularity, in terms of when you look at the numbers. Stream counts and all that kind of stuff. It's you know, millions and millions and millions. And so we've recognized how important it is. And you know, and coming back live, we've realized we had to play it. I mean, there's just no way. You know, I think they'd burn down the venue if we didn't, like, play that song at these shows. So we learned how to play it well, I think. And then it occurred to us, you bring up this song, but that, you know, there's obviously never a video for it. How could there have been? Right. Mm-hmm. But it is our biggest song to this day, and probably will be till the day I'm dead. And so we thought, what if we did a video? And then we were just thinking about what we would do for that. And we thought, well, you know, it's really kind of like it's everybody else's song more than it's ours, because there's something very vague about that song, right? It's got, as I said, it's instrumental, and it's got the spoken thing, but the spoken thing, the more you listen to it, the more you realize that, that you can't figure out what they're talking about. And I wrote that thing, and I asked Paula to speak it. That's a little history about that thing. I wrote it there in the studio, like, 5 minutes before she says it. It was off the cuff, and I asked her to read it. And I think I read it to her once and said, read it like this. She read it a different way, like a different kind of accents and different, not accents, but different emphases and stuff. And like, you know, and it's just, we just moved on. And I can't remember really the way I wanted it spoken now to this day. But in any case, what I've realized about that song is that it brings, people bring their own thing to it, you know? They immerse themselves in it, and they kind of bring their own lives to it. And it kind of becomes they think it's talking to them or for them. And so we decided that we would invite people to submit footage to be in the video. And we thought we'd get like 100, you know, videos or something, and we got something like 7,000. And,
oh, wow.
And originally we thought we would try to put a little bit of everybody's submission in the video. Clearly 7,000 clips, it's just, we'd have to make I did the math, I think is, if we put like just 1 second, it was gonna have to be like 200 minute cut of the, you know, so that's longer than that's longer than Apocalypse Now, you know. So I mean, so there's gonna be some disappointed people that aren't in this video, but it's really great. I mean you know, the band directed it, so we all looked at all this stuff and really came up with a way to do it. And not many people have seen it, but for your listeners, this also happens tomorrow. So this is interesting. I'm doing your show tonight because it's like your circle in Montreal is getting a lot of, you're getting the jump on some news. So that gets released tomorrow too. And that's just exciting in a number of ways, not just because the band's releasing it, but because these people are going to see, you know, see themselves in this video. And and the people that have seen it so far, like the record label, the guy called me, he said he cried watching this thing. And that's not the only person that said that. There's only a few people that have seen it, and two out of five people that outside the band, they reported that they were crying after they saw it. So I don't want to boast about it because I, you know, but that I found that to be a pretty good accolade to be moving people that much. So we're excited for people to see it.
I'm going to play a condensed, slightly condensed version of that song since we're going to be pinching time today. But up next is Kick the Tragedy, which the music video will be out for tomorrow. Enjoy this song and we'll be right back.
Before I play this track, I think it's time that we do a ticket giveaway here. So I'm going to start the song in just a minute and put the phone back on the dial. The next two callers into the station will be winning a pair of tickets to see Drop 19s a week today, Monday the 21st at Bar La Ritz. The phone number is 514-848-7471. And like I said, I'll open the phone line as soon as I start the song. Tomorrow we'll be getting an official music video for this seminal track after all these years. This is Kick the Tragedy, and once again, the phone number is 514-848-7471.
Thank you.
Massamatty, Canada's premier festival celebrating LGBTQ plus Afro film and arts, returns for its 16th edition from October 23rd to 27th. This year, the festival explores themes of rebirth and resilience, showcasing an inspiring lineup of films, highlighting stories of healing, transformation, and struggle. Massamatty's film screenings will take place at various venues throughout the city, with films also available to be streamed online. The festival's opening cocktail event will take place on October 23rd at the McCord Museum, featuring a performance by Ensemble Opiora. On October 26th, the Massamatty Cabaret at Livar will feature performances by Reggie, a drag voguing-inspired show featuring acrobatics, live painting, and live DJs. For more information and to view the full festival program, visit massamatty.ca.
Do you want to have a discussion about movies?
You have part of my attention. You have the minimum amount.
And half the iconic sounds of cinema? Well, tune in to At the Movies with Iconic Sounds every Tuesday mornings from 8 to 9 a.m. only on CJLO 1690 AM with your host, Remy.
Still have one pair of tickets available, and I'm going to leave the phone line open as I play the next segment of this interview. You can call in at 514-848-7471 if you want to win a pair of tickets to see Drop 19s at Barlaritz next Monday, the 21st. We'll be right back.
So with the Drop 19s being back now, when I spoke to you, it was kind of the album had been finished last time I saw you, and you hadn't played live yet, and it was still all of this like what's to come thing, and you seemed unsure if it would be lasting. But here we are, and you're doing another string of shows, which I'm sure. Really excited to see. I was reading an old interview with Paula from 2002 where she had mentioned that you and Steve approached her about making another album. Mm-hmm. Why, what like made the third record take this long to come to fruition, like another 20 years? And what was going on back then that potentially could have created another album?
Right. Well, what was happening was that I was going to leave music. I decided that I wasn't disenchanted. I was looking back and saying, I felt like it was either I continue doing it or I move on with my life. And I was very proud of what we had achieved. I mean, like I was telling you earlier, I mean, I didn't really know what to do after getting a call back from a label. You know, I mean, I did not plan for longevity. And so a little bit is kind of just me trying to figure out what this was the whole time, you know, maybe even to this day, I'm still doing that. And I was leaving Boston and I was going to New York and to move back to New York finally, because I, you know, had been in Boston for about 9 years. And so this is late 90s. And I said, guys, if we're not that I had been asking you to do it, but I said, if it's going to happen, it's going to be now or never. And it wasn't a threat. It wasn't I wasn't even advocating for it to happen. I was just trying to explain to them that if they were interested in it happening, it would be now or never. And boy, did I mean it. I mean, until I didn't, I suppose. I never, all those years after, and oh, by the way, we said, Paul, it wasn't a matter of, we said entertain the conversation. So we didn't. That's as far as it went. We sat. Paula, Steve, and I sat down, and we said, "Are we going to do this or whatever?" And Paula said, "You know, I'm busy with this other stuff," and that was enough for me to say, "Great, okay, we have an answer then." And like, you know, I wasn't interested in like doing it without her. We were kind of come across the idea that Delaware was kind of our, you know, our indelible sound. And so I wanted to kind of get those voices back together again, if we were going to do it. And so we just, it was very, pleasant. And we just said, no, I mean, okay. And that's it. And I tell you, I've never been sure of anything more in my life that I was done, and that, and not with any, grief, you know, it was, I was very satisfied honestly, with my life and what I had achieved as a young person, like making music, getting to make some records and like tour and play festivals. And I mean, and then I went, the rest of my life went on. I, you know, 20 years go by and never considered it for a second. People, believe me, people asked. I mean, I meet people and people from my past or people that I'd meet would approach me about, you know, doing something. And I just would always shut it down every single time. And just something hit me. I think it was 2022. I don't know what year it was, a couple years ago. And someone, a friend called, and it was one of these typical phone calls I get. It's like, you know, like, let's make some music. And I said, no, I don't think so. And, but I hung up and thinking, man, like it was the first time I hung up the phone and actually thought to myself, what would a modern Drop 19 song sound like? And that was very telling to me, that was the first time I was curious about it. And, so we just, I got Steve, texted Steve, and he was kind of, I think, waiting for that text probably for years and years. And I think similar with the other band members and Paula too, ultimately. I mean, she was excited to get back into it too. So I over the last couple of years since our return, I've been asked this question so many times, why now and why ever? And I just don't have an answer. I really don't. I didn't want to do it. And then I did. It's just that simple. And this band knows how to go away. And when we go away, I meant it, you know, we went away, that was it. But coming back now, it also happened to kind of coincide with this, you know, I don't know, it's a resurgence, but there's this whole American shoegaze scene. You know, we're attributed to shoegaze. I don't know if we are totally shoegaze, but that's certainly what it'll be on my fucking tombstone. There's this whole American shoegaze scene that you know, and I think it's fortuitous that this has happened, along, you know, contemporaneously with my band coming back, because it means that there's like a bit of an audience out there for us. And but it's not because of that. That's not the way it happened. It wasn't that, oh, we saw like this opportunity because of, you know, people's, this sort of, this trend coming back around. It was just really kind of a lucky thing, frankly, that we decided to come back and like, and thankfully there's been an audience. So.
I recall you saying before the record came out that you were probably going to be playing mostly Delaware songs at these shows, and that you might only play like three new tracks from the album. But I was really excited to hear that it was pretty evenly split on those last run of shows that you did.
I think it leans more heavily Delaware, but yeah. Certainly, if not just because like Kick the Tragedy played for like over 10 minutes. And so, you know, even though it's one song, it, right, that's kind of, so time wise, I think Delaware takes up more of it than anything else. But yes, you're correct. It's not just we get approached a lot to do this. You play Delaware from beginning to end, for example. Mm-hmm. And I have to admit, I am not a fan of those shows because Here's why. And people love them. And people love them because, I don't know why. Because they love the album, obviously. They love the albums that they're going to see perform live. But what I don't like about it is that, listen, because it's like setlist.com, everybody probably knows what's coming next in a setlist, right? So there's that. It's not that, I'm not saying that you're fooling people by not playing something in a sequence that they're going to already kind of be aware of. But what they haven't done is actually heard those. So if they see something on setlist and they see a setlist, they haven't actually heard that setlist played where they're hearing those songs back to back in a certain way. And when you play one of those playing an album shows, everybody knows what's coming next. And you've heard it coming next the whole time, your whole life, because that's how you listen to the album. And so I find it just a very deflating way to envision a show. The downside of this is that like we get offered more money to do it that way. Mm-hmm. Like the festival will come along and say, we'll pay you, you know, whatever it is, if you come and play Delaware. And so when I say I don't like it, I'm not saying we'll never do it. We probably will have to cave and do it one of these days because we'll get offered enough money to do it. And it's not that it's a cash grab. It's just that it's not easy to keep, you know, nobody's getting rich here. So it might be the case where we have to do it sometime. But I will say we've resisted it so far to do the, you know, the Delaware from beginning to end. And this set is – it's a mix of that. It's a mix of Delaware, certainly, Hard Light, the new album. And then we throw in a cover of Lana Del Rey that we did.
Right.
And then we also do some stuff from an EP that was released in between Delaware and our second album, National Coma. That was called Your Aquarium EP. Yeah. And then there's a great song called Nausea on that I like. And that's a lot of fun to play. And then we play some songs from 1991 as well.
Okay. So as a reunited band, how do you kind of find the balance between being a band that's looking backwards at the past and what you did and what people came to love from you, and also being a band that's currently making music and, you know, being present and looking ahead? How do you kind of feel about finding that balance and not just kind of succumbing to playing the hits?
Right. Well, the return of this band was all about Hard Light. I mean, there was never talk about even playing live. That came later, after really being all the way through having rough mixes of Hard Light, where we started thinking, well, you know, if this works, we kind of liked what we had in our hands. We said, this might actually work, and this is good. And we were feeling good about it. We said, this might re-enter us into the conversation, which it did. Mm-hmm. And I think that, to answer your question, it's like that was the genesis of everything, that we came back for this, to make this album. We go to play live, it's very hard for us to just switch the subject and go, well, no, we're actually just back to play songs we were known for, you know, a very long time ago. Is it? And that's not just a selfish point of view. I think that you live long enough and you see that it's kind of like, you know, don't forget, in 15 years, Hard Light will be old as the hills, and you know that'll be retro. And so I guess I don't look at it so linear like that. You know, I think that there's ways in which the old stuff relates very well to the new stuff. It just sounds like this band. This mm-hmm. band doesn't have this band doesn't have 10 albums. Okay.
Totally.
It's not a very wide, or a very expansive, you know, discography. But it spans a lot of time. So, you know, that's how I'd probably explain that.
Well, listening to Hard Light really feels like you're listening to a Drop 19's record, even though, there's only two that came before it. And it was so amazing to hear the warm reception to it, as someone who loves your 90s material and really loved Hard Light when it came out. It's been great to see so much positive reception. And I'm really excited to see you guys perform here a week today, next Monday, for the listeners listening right now live on the air. I'm going to play us out with the song Tarantula from that record, which might be my favorite. Thanks again so much, Greg, for coming on the show here today. It's been a real pleasure having you.
It's been my pleasure, Owen, and look forward to seeing you in a week.
Yeah, I'll play us out now. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next week. We'll be right back.
Thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in today to this very special episode, chatting with Greg from Drop 19s. I'm just here to stop in one last time to remind you that CJLO here, we're currently hosting our funding drive for the year, and that all the details can be found online at cjlofundingdrive.com. There are numerous ways you can support, including raffles and events. This week, on Thursday night, I'll be attending a screening of Gamera 2, Attack of Legion, at Cinema Public as a part of the funding drive. Thanks again, everyone. We'll see you next week. Enjoy the rest of your holidays if you're not done celebrating Thanksgiving yet. Or if you don't celebrate, enjoy the last few minutes of your long weekend. We'll see you next week. Thanks.